Babbel presents How to Speak to Animals.
That's a dog.
In Spanish, it's un perro.
He says woof.
Woof? No. Spanish dogs say wow, wow.
Wow?
Wow. More like with a G. Wow, wow.
Oh, okay. Wow. So that's a little chick.
Aw, it's un pollito.
Chicks say chirp, chirp.
Chirp? That sounds like a low smoke detector battery. In Spanish, they say pio, pio.
Pio, pio.
Sí, you do a very good pollito.
With Babbel, speak to your dog, cat, girlfriend, best friend, pretty much anyone in French, Spanish, German, and more. 150 language experts and educators designed Babbel to be the most efficient and effective way to learn a new language. It takes just 10 to 15 minutes a day to get conversational. Now, try Babbel free. Just go to Babbel.com or download the Babbel app and start learning a new language today. That's Babbel.com. Babbel.com.
Did you know there are over 1,000 podcasts on Radio.com? Download the app or head to Radio.com to listen to all your favorite national and local podcasts, including your favorite morning shows and radio shows on demand. At the top of the app homepage, click the podcast icon to discover new shows, subscribe, and manage your podcast subscriptions. Go to your app store or Radio.com/download for all your podcast listening. Radio.com.
Thanks for streaming The Score. Chicago Sports Radio 670.
Mully and Hall. Mornings 5 to 9 a.m.
The skipper of the Chicago White Sox, Rick Renteria. I can't imagine what you're going through. I mean, how many different lineups have you made up in your head? Have you jotted down? How much fun is this going to be for you?
Obviously, it's extremely exciting for all of us. I think Rick in the front office and everybody there has been trying to put us on a trek, obviously an upward trek. And for me to be able now to kind of look at that lineup, and it's exciting. Extended, obviously, you look at it from 1 through 9. Possibly, you know, you got opportunity to do some damage, keep the line moving, the pitching. I mean, the whole ball of wax. It's exciting to see. We're looking forward to getting the spring going and the season started and, you know, hopefully attain and reach those expectations that we've been placing upon ourselves since we became this this change.
Mully and Hall, mornings 5 to 9 a.m. on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Zach, Stephen A. mentioned get you some help. Paxson's built a couple winners in Chicago. Do you have confidence that your GM can get you the help you need?
They might speak differently, man, but, you know, I'm with the team, man. You know, I gotta put the team first. They're terrible, man. I gotta put the team first. But, you know, it's just the situation we're in right now.
Stop. Middays on The Score.
Whoa, that was a thing when it happened. We don't know the extent to which it spurred the leaks that, we're on it. We're gonna do something. We'll bring somebody in here. We don't know. The top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball, the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Remaining home opponents include Illinois, Penn State, and Minnesota. Single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com.
Where's Lawrence Holmes? I don't like these guys.
I know.
Yeah, it's fine. We're aware of that.
But I don't think that voice would be looking for Lawrence Holmes.
You don't know that.
Maybe.
I don't draw any conclusions. But Lawrence is off today, and we are in. We're going to be here for the next couple hours. So we've reestablished contact with Joe Cowley, who is on Twitter, at Joe Cowley Hoops. Now that we've got an audible phone line, he is here to let us know everything going on with the Chicago Bulls. So you have the story, Joe, and as we were talking before, just what is getting them to this point? How is it slowly getting to from this inertia to action?
I think, do I sound all right now?
Yes.
Absolutely. You sound beautiful.
Way better.
I think, you know, I think just watching how the wheels have kind of come off this rebuild in year three, which was a significant year. You know, I don't think this is something that just happened over the weekend because there were boos and because First Take didn't go well for Zach LaVine. I think they've actually been doing their due diligence in this department since late November, early December. But just having a bunch of executives in town and having guys that Michael Reinsdorf likes and trusts
and he could actually bounce some stuff off there before they start getting formal and asking permission to talk to guys or take that route. They wanted to see what's out there, what the vibe is like, and in doing so, they had to show their hand to certain people, and that kind of got out that this has been going on, and it's something that's going to accelerate over the next couple months.
Did the noise on First Take make any noise in that front office, Joe? Do you know whether people were, I don't know, rankled by it?
Yeah, no, they heard it. But, I mean, look, I've written this numerous times. This organization, started with Jerry Reinsdorf, is tone deaf and is able to block out any kind of outside noise with almost glee in their faces. They don't really get caught up in that kind of pressure. They don't get caught up in media pressure. They don't get caught up in an unhappy fan base. They get caught up in what they're doing, and all of a sudden, when the business of basketball looks like things are turning towards more empty red seats, I think that opened some eyes this year to see the drop in attendance. And like I was trying to bring up earlier, you know, I wrote in late November, I think it was November 26th, they had the Luol Deng appreciation night, and I think that was the kind of the final straw for Garform. You know, Jerry's a very loyal guy. He expects the people underneath him to be loyal to each other. And the fact that several players complained to the Reinsdorfs that they felt that Gar was aloof that night to the likes of Joakim and Luol and guys like that, didn't pay them the proper respect, I think was the final straw that they needed to hear. They were already hearing bad things from Doug Collins. Doug Collins was not a Gar Foreman guy. And so I think Gar kind of had the X on his back for a while, and now it's just a matter of them figuring out who this person is they want to identify, how loud they want that voice to be, and exactly how they want this thing to work. I don't think there's any definitive plan yet, because they really have to first target the guy and say, can he handle this? Can he handle this? Do we want him to handle this? So I think that's what the legwork is right now.
How can they go about finding new eyes on this with John Paxson involved in the hire? I can't get past it. It's like, well, John Paxson is going to be moving to an emeritus position or a different spot, but he's going to be finding this next person. It's shot already. I mean, they've dribbled this down their leg. If all this is just a guy in the current culture, how can they then put that person out there and say, now we're doing modern basketball business?
Well, I don't think it's going to be a guy in their current culture. I think they're hoping to get a guy that could bring in a new culture. And, you know, John, and I know the comparison to Ken Williams and John are not even close. First of all, for them to be able to put Kenny where they put Kenny and put Kenny in that corner is unbelievable, because Kenny's ego is 20 times of John Paxson. John Paxson is not an ego guy. John Paxson can put that ego in check if he thinks the ideas are right, or if he feels, you know what, I have to accept and respect what we've done, and I have to allow this guy to either slip or to, you know, do something great with this position. So I don't think there's going to be that kind of fight. But make no mistake, John Paxson is not going to be stripped of any power or lose any say through this process.
Then what are we doing here?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It comes down to this. It comes down to the Reinsdorfs believe in John Paxson. Do all of you believe in John Paxson? That's what it comes down to. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, he will be heavily involved in this. You know, Michael Reinsdorf and Jerry consider him, you know, their main consigliere in all of this. And he will be given that opportunity to help this process along. And it comes down to this. Do you believe that John Paxson could do that successfully, or you don't? Because the ball is moving through him still. He's in the offense. So this idea that it's, you know, it could be just Michael's decision or Jerry's decision is just not accurate, because they don't have that kind of reach throughout the NBA, and they need help in that department, and that's where John comes in.
Talking with Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times. He covers the Bulls. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Extended dance mix. We're in for Lawrence today. Joe, would the first order of business for this new guy essentially be, hi, I'm here on the job. Here's how we're going to do things. By the way, Jim Boylan's fired, and it's my call. Like, he's being brought in to make that decision easier for John Paxson?
You know, yeah, I definitely think that if you hire a GM and you're giving him a voice, the first thing he's going to want to do is bring in a coach that he knows, he believes in, and he trusts. Unless he sits down and sees something in Jim Boylan and says, Yeah, that's my guy.
Well, you got the wrong guy.
Then I'm done.
The whole place on fire and run. No, I mean, I definitely think that. Now, is it a good way for them to get out of this with less blood on the weapon and fingerprints on the weapon instead of saying, oh, there they go again. They mishired another coach. Absolutely. From a PR standpoint, they can say, hey, we told you guys we were going to let this guy have power, and his first move is to go ahead and switch the coach. It might not have been our decision, but again, we have to let this guy have power, bring a guy he's comfortable with. So is that a way for them to get out of the Jim Boylan cloud? Yes, because they've doubled down on this guy. They've openly, job security, contract-wise, they've openly just doubled down publicly numerous times since last season. So, they're not bringing this guy in just to do their dirty work and change as a coach. That's not it. But if that happens to happen, oh, well, you know, so be it.
I want to get back to what I still think is the central issue that we're dealing with here, and it's a lack of either institutional knowledge or just overall NBA connections and awareness that John Paxson's here because he has to be, because he's created a spot where his presence has kept Jerry and Michael from becoming maybe having the NBA footprint and connections and communications they would otherwise have, because he's been able to silo that. He's made himself essentially indispensable because he's been the basketball guy. In football, this happens too. There are football teams, whether it's the Ford family or the Rooney family or the McCaskey family, that say, look, we need to hire a football guy, but we don't know enough. So they hire Ernie Accorsi, for better or for worse, who is a guy who has supposedly sells his connections and the animal that lives on his head and the connections that it has.
Is that for sale?
Yeah, well, it has connections. And he comes in and he says, well, let's look at these people because I know people across the league. Is there that guy in the NBA? Is there somebody who Michael Reinsdorf could say, hey, I need somebody above John Paxson to come in and advise me on trying to find a president of basketball operations that can run everything?
No. And first of all, John Paxson has no animal on his head.
I know that. He's no Ernie Accorsi.
Zero animals.
No, I mean, look, they hired their guy who they thought would come in and do that. His name is Doug Collins. I mean, when you think about the history of the Reinsdorfs, or Jerry specifically, it is the group is very small in both organizations. And everything is tight. Everything is a small circle, and they don't venture outside that circle. I mean, that's just the business of what they do. Now, their argument's going to be, well, especially on Jerry's thing, is going to be, well, how are you going to question me? I have 7 world championships. The logical explanation, or the way people should be looking at it, is, okay, that's fine. What have you done for me lately? And also, you have to kind of understand those 7 championships are great, and it worked then, but the climate, and to me, in both sports, has changed so drastically. I think they've pivoted, and they've done a pretty good job on the baseball side of things. I don't think they've done a good job with basketball and kept up with what's, you know, put it this way. The last week when New Orleans was in town, and I know I've thrown this name out there a couple times, at least on the show, I wrote a column about it last year. Trajan Langdon is sitting there. And, you know, I think Griff was on the trip, too, the president. And, you know, obviously when he got hired in the summer, the first hire was Trajan Langdon, a guy that I was streaming at the book. And you could just see, even if Griff isn't relatable to guys or doesn't have that pause, which I don't think is the case. I think he actually is. Right. To have a guy like Trajan Langdon as your general manager and just to see his presence there, the way he interacts with players, and just the kind of coolness he adds to this New Orleans thing, that is, it's like watching like rock stars, and he's like their manager, you know, because that's really, with Zion, that's what they've become. It's like a rock star atmosphere wherever they go. And that's the kind, when I say that they need a new vibe, to change the entire climate culture, it's that type of guy, that type of kind of presence where he can not only relate to players, but the thing that really stuck out yesterday is we are so numb in the city to what the Bulls have done to us from a basketball standpoint, to actually step back and to hear the names Ronnie Fields and the grind that true Chicago basketball is about is just a reminder of how far off we are between Bulls and Chicago basketball and how the Bulls are missing out on this opportunity to embrace that by bringing the right guy in to kind of bridge all of that together and sell that to free agents and sell that to superstars to come here, because there's something here. The idea that, oh, it's cold, that's BS. You know, there's other places that are cold where superstars are going. So that's what the All-Star Weekend really did for me. It was just it was frustrating that bridge hasn't been gapped. There hasn't been gap between the two.
Joe, let's have some fun here before we go, because so often we talk and it's like, oh, maybe they just ought to burn the building down. We're like, oh, well, here are some torches. Will these work? What did you think of the All-Star game? Did you have fun with the Elam ending? How was the event as a guy there to cover it all? I mean, I had a blast watching it. I assume it all right. Carried over if you were there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, going into the weekend, when you're the hometown media guys, you know, myself, Casey Johnson, we were just complaining, this is just going to be a mess. This is going to be a crutch show, you know, every adjective you could throw out there. But for the Zach LaVine thing to happen Friday morning kind of was the perfect way to ease, if embarrassing, but an ease into this thing. By the time the game started and with Common, his introduction, and then that fourth quarter that nobody saw coming. Oh. You could have guessed, okay, it's going to be more competitive. But for guys to be laying out and even getting dirty, Kyle Lowry was getting dirty in that game in the fourth quarter. You just have never seen that in an All-Star. It was great. And it was, and again, it comes back to, it reminds the city of Chicago how much they love basketball and how much they have to get past the numbness that the Bulls have caused in basketball. And it was great in every way. The dunk contest, yeah, the judging wasn't the best, but you know, whatever. It was just a great show, a great spotlight on this city, and it showed a rawness to the city that we haven't seen in quite some time, where you know, and I say that in a positive way, a positive rawness to the city that we all feel and know, but not, I think the nation got to kind of see it, feel it.
That's a point well made. It really is. It felt like the best, most little chilling free agent pitch that gives you a tingle when you got, you know, Common out there doing what he does, and the whole montage with everybody talking. If they can do it, if the league can do it, if they can polish this turd, why can't the Bulls, you know, why can't they themselves make the moves to reestablish that kind of swagger and that kind of confidence that you can sell a next generation of NBA players?
And that's the frustration. You just said it. Why can't the Bulls? It took Common, 6 minutes to sell Chicago? This damn team's been kicking it around. When did they fire Tibbs? 5-6 years ago? They've been kicking this bucket up and down the street, and they can't even relate to their own fans in that manner. I mean, it's a shame. It's a shame because there is something here. There is something about this city that I think would really make a guy, whether he grew up in California or the South or whatever, just go, I want to play there. That's where I want to be. I mean, I want to, you know, Benji Wilson and the legends and Isaiah, and I want to be there. I want to play there. And so, you know, hopefully they find this guy and they get this thing right, because to me, that's the biggest thing I took out of this is what a shame that the Bulls have numbed us to really what Chicago basketball is all about.
You know what I think I'm thinking about here? And the more I'm honest with the way I'm thinking about it, I got to get back to what I talked about during transition. That All-Star presentation was proudly of color.
Yes.
In its art, in its representation, in the tone. On the one hand, Jerry Reinsdorf's White Sox this year in their marketing campaign have really leaned into that and embraced it in Tim Anderson and some of their exciting young players of color. And they're doing it in their art design and in the celebration of the emotional side of baseball. And I think it's awesome. Yet here you have the more progressive sport where, unlike baseball, which has the average fan is a middle-aged white man, basketball's not like that. And we know that the trope of two Chicagos. It's not really a trope, the truth of two Chicagos. Where the Bulls for so long, I mean, look, Jerry's white, Michael's white, John Paxson's white, Gar Forman's white, Doug Collins is white, Jim Paxson is white, Jim Boylan is white. And after a while, the optics, regardless of what you say, regardless of how you do it, the optics are overwhelming. Maybe the lesson to be drawn from that is just, it's really hard for all these middle-aged white people to be cool. You know, you talk about you're talking about what Trajan Langdon is doing, and you can't dismiss that as not mattering when you look at the culture of the NBA and the young black men who are the lifeblood of the NBA. Get with it, man. You know, I don't. Maybe it's something that we're just looking past, something as simple as understanding where basketball culture is.